Hey all, we're jumping back into science, technology, and government by Rothbard today, and picking up where we left off, the next question Murray is going to ask is there really a shortage of scientists? Well, not really, even just by the numbers, but he starts off by noting that a shortage of scientists, or a shortage of anything really, is a general market problem. It's not a military problem. Meaning, the government can siphon off as many resources as it wants, or scientists, but quoting Rothbard, government cannot manufacture one scientist. The scientists must enter the profession themselves. So how do scientists become available for use? Well, whether it be from the private or the public sector. There's only two places, as he shows. And the first is from adults who have left the profession and can be induced to re-enter, and young people, fresh out of school and who are just entering the workforce. The former category can only be induced through higher wages. And for the latter category as well, actually, because no one goes into a tough field like this unless it's going to pay well. So the way to increase the supply in scientists is to increase their wages. Now, though it isn't obvious, this is specifically why you wouldn't want the government to artificially increase the supply of scientists. For when they get into these fields, there's an oversupply, and therefore their wages are lower. So you see the problem already. Now, the point is that in a free market, there really is no such thing as a shortage, because this all gets revealed in higher wages. It's only in this warped playing field where it appears like we need more government intervention to stimulate demand. Well, it turns out that in 1957, there was a study done by the National Bureau of Economic Research, and you'll be humored to see what they found. In the last 80 years, the number of chemists and engineers in the United States expanded by considerably more than 17 times as much as the total labor force. Hardly appears like a shortage, he says. And he goes on to say, but more important, Blank and Stigler, who did the study, by the way, stressed the point that the very concept of shortage makes little sense except in relation to price, in this case, the price for scientific services. A shortage means that demand for the labor is greater than its supply at current wage rates, so that the wage rate tends to rise. But what actually happened? Well, the same study showed that since 1939, salaries of engineers relative to earnings of doctors, dentists, and lawyers have declined, and have also declined relative to manufacturing wage earners. Even the salaries of clergymen, pharmacists, and school teachers rose relative to engineers in this period. How then can there be a shortage of engineers? So the point is that scientists' wages have stagnated compared to other fields where government intervention was less prominent. And another way he explains this is that even in the years since 1950, when there was the Korean War, and obviously you need scientists in a time of war, yet scientists' wages, again, stagnated during this time. This signals that there is already an oversupply of scientists. And even though there may have appeared to be a supposed shortage, because at that time, there were a lot of ads running through the papers looking for engineers, supposedly. Well, 9/10 of those ads, as Murray points out, were from government defense contract firms. Now, really think about that. And how about in college campuses? Well, engineers, as he notes, takes a lot of math and physics. And 87% of mathematicians and almost 60% of physicists are employed by the colleges. So there's no shortage of these people in math and physics. Now, regulations. Surely my smart listeners know this is a factor. Especially during the Cold War, we were worried about the enemy stealing our secrets. And think about what happened with people like Edward Snowden. This thing still happens today. But I don't want to paraphrase Murray here. I want to quote him directly. He puts it this way. To be sure, in regards to regulations, we don't want to encourage Russian spies to steal our military secrets. And yet we must recognize that scientific innovation is the discovery of natural laws, and that these laws are open to all to find, whether Russians or Americans. Throughout history, no important new invention has remained a secret for long, and either espionage or independent discovery would eventually yield the Russians the same technology. It is far more important, therefore, to create a climate of freedom in which scientists can operate creatively. Another thing he points out is that the National Science Foundation warned in relation to the scientists who were actually being prosecuted for these so-called crimes was that, quote, loyalty of security type investigations are clearly undesirable and unlikely to serve any useful purpose. Now, again, Murray was writing Murray was a little more forgiving of the state writing this in the 1950s, but he wrote in regards to what the government can do. In short, the government does its best and most constructive job, not by positive intervention into the society, but by repealing its own restrictions on free activity, by lifting its own burdens from the scientific or indeed any other sector of society. And this right here, folks, is really the knockout quote of chapter 3. The present educational structure drags all the students down to the level of the lowest common denominator, passes all students, teaches rubbish rather than subject disciplines, and allows hooligans to widen their self-expression by tormenting and distracting those eager to learn, all in the name of democracy. We shall never know how many potentially bright youngsters who could have been able and even great scientists have been permanently crippled by the progressive education philosophy dominant in public schools. Well, that's going to do it for this episode. Tomorrow in chapter 4, Murray discusses more or less the same thing, but tackling a different area. If there is no actual scarcity of scientists, then how could there be a scarcity of scientific research in general? Well, see you tomorrow and we'll discuss it. Hey everyone, please like, follow, donate, subscribe, and share. Any donations will be used to reach more people.